Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I can always guarantee when we're getting ready to talk with our Open House new media and social media guru, Steve Krieger, we'll be both learning stuff and probably having our eyes open much wider to this amazing online world that's changing at breakneck pace. And tonight, no exception. Steve Krieger, welcome back to Open House.
Thanks, Lee.
Great to talk, as always. First, you found a really interesting man who's been looking at a couple of significant issues online, why we share stuff, and also the role of controversy in marketing something. And in both of them, there are some real surprises. First, tell us how he went about researching this.
Yeah, that's right. So Jonah Berger is the author of the book, a new book, Contagious, How Things Catch On. And as part of his research, he looked at thousands of online pieces of content and measured which of those pieces were shared, which of those things were shared a lot, and what kinds of emotions got people interested in sharing that online content.
So what did you find then, Steve?
Well, the first part of his findings aren't particularly surprising. So broadly speaking, things that make us feel good, we're more likely to share, and things that make us feel bad, we don't want to share. So we like sharing things that make us look good and smart, and we don't like sharing things that, you know, people might think, you know, put them in a bad mood or will make them feel sad. But the key finding was that things that make us feel angry or anxious are much more likely to be shared online, which makes sense. You know, anger often evokes a response in us, whereas things that cause sadness often make us want to withdraw. So while the two big findings were, if it makes you feel good, people will share it, but yeah, if it makes you feel angry, you'll also be much more likely to
share. See, that's interesting. So if you want to get something noticed or shared, it's not just emotion you need to stimulate, but what this guy says is a high arousal emotion.
Yeah, that's right. And so I guess the second really interesting observation from this study was that sharing negative things, creating negative reviews, can actually be really beneficial. He shares the example of the movie Borat that came out, you know, nearly 10 years ago now.
You'll never forget it.
Terrible movie that poked relentless fun at the country of Kazakhstan. Now, it was by no means a documentary. It was by no means portraying the country in a positive light. No. Yet after the movie, visits to that country jumped by about 300%. And so the key analysis of that point they discovered was that negativity can, in fact, to a point, increase awareness, and it's better to be for people to be aware of you than to live in obscurity.
It's very revealing. As I said, he also looks at the role of controversy in getting a conversation going online. And we'd think that controversy probably does cause conversation, but it's not that simple.
Well, that's right. I mean, he talks about the need to find that middle ground of controversy. I mean, if you you want enough controversy to get people talking and to make people think that what you're talking about is interesting, but you don't want so much controversy that it's actually uncomfortable to discuss. How you find that middle ground, he doesn't provide advice on that, and that's probably the magic point that no one really knows.
The thing that works beyond emotion is what they call social currency. Tell us what that is, Steve.
That's right. So it taps into two areas. Emotion is one aspect that drives people to share on social media, and social currency is another. And it's really just that feeling you get from social status, from people thinking highly of you. So again, people like to share things that make them look good or smart or like they're in the know. And so an example that he shares is of the social network LinkedIn, who sent an email to a number of their members saying, hey, you're in the top 5 or 10% of profiles in LinkedIn. And by sending people that email, lots of them then shared that information again on LinkedIn. So they'd been recognized as being a bit of a mover and a shaker, and then they took that information and then shared it with the people in their social network. You know, they wanted to get credit, the feeling, that special feeling that you get from having status with other people. And so a lot of social networks are trying to tap into social currency, helping people to feel that emotion that comes with status.
There are so many emerging and new behaviors in all of this. They also did an interesting experiment, Steve.
They did. They brought a bunch of people into a laboratory, and they got some of them to sit still for 60 seconds and the others to run on the spot for 60 seconds. They got both groups to sit down. They gave them an unrelated piece of content and asked them whether they wanted to email that to someone that they knew. And what they found is that just running on the spot actually doubled the likelihood of someone sharing that content with others. The feelings that are evoked, you know, when your heart is racing, as it is during exercise, or again, as it is with the emotion of anger, that causes people to respond.
I think it's all so fascinating. Speaking of which, you found some data on whether those exercising apps actually get you fitter, whether they're just a 1 or 2 day novelty wonder.
That's right. I mean, there's a lot of these apps out there that'll track where you've been running and what your heart rate looks like and kind of measure all those statistics over time. I love those kind of apps.
And it's worked for you. Yes.
It has, and it's been really beneficial. But I think, and looking at this study that was recently done, it's really difficult to track the difference between people who use these fitness apps and those who don't.
Yeah.
Looking really broadly at the data, it seems that people who use apps are maintaining exercise patterns over a longer period of time and that their fitness improves over time. However, it seems that this perhaps relates more to the types of people who are likely to use these apps, you know, engineers, people who like data and numbers, people who like to track things. You know, this is you, you're more likely to benefit from this when you're exercising.
I wonder how long these apps will actually have an impact on people, whether they'll become part of our exercise routine. You got any thoughts about that?
I think it's very possible. Yeah. Where these apps work is tapping into the different motivators that we all have. So some of us love to see progress. Some of us love to be kept accountable for our goals. Some people really benefit from encouragement. And these apps, you know, depending on the app that you choose, can really assist in motivating you in these different ways. So if you understand what your motivators are for exercising, you can find an app that can give you an advantage. And so that's the key.
Right. Now, to one of those dynamics that sneak up on those of us who've kind of been there to bridge the old with the new, it's a plaintive cry from a mum. In her words, my teenage son does not know how to mail a letter and I blame technology.
It's a pretty bold headline, that
yeah.
one. It's a fascinating story. So the story goes that the son has, you know, all these different technologies, smartphone, tablet, laptop, very familiar with the computer, does really well at school, but he has absolutely no idea how to address an envelope.
How did she discover that this was lacking in her son?
Well, the story goes that the mother and the father encouraged the son to send a letter out about his upcoming graduation to his grandparents and his aunts and his uncles. And that was when his mother observed that her son actually didn't know how to write a letter and put it in the mailbox.
Yeah, I'm interested with little or no knowledge of how to write or send something by post. What did he actually do to attempt to do it?
Well, he put the mailing address originally in the top right of the envelope.
Yeah.
He didn't personalise the envelope. He just put the address there. He didn't put any name on. He had no idea what to do with a stamp. He put it, you know, on the top left of the envelope and had no idea about, you know, kind of putting a return address there as well. So
No
aspects of mailing were familiar to him. He had no idea once he'd addressed the envelope what he should actually do with it or where it would be posted.
It's amazing. But anyhow, there you go. The other revealing thing was that his mum tried to actually meet her son where he was, told him to go to the Postal Service website to find out how to post a letter. Then what happened?
So he got to the post office and he realised that there were no instructions at the post office for how to send a letter. And there was nothing available on the website either. And so, perhaps ironically, he went to Google and googled how to send a letter, and they were able to give him the instructions about how to do that. So, look, it shows again just how much the world is changing. And
yeah.
those people who've only grown up knowing the digital world, we perhaps shouldn't be surprised that some of these older technologies are completely unfamiliar.
Yeah, sure. Good old Dr. Google. All very, very revealing. And finally tonight, on a lighter note, much lighter, you've found 8 bizarre social networks that you wouldn't believe exist. Take us through a couple of them, Steve.
That's right. I mean, I think there's all these kind of niche networks that are becoming available all the time, just tapping into some very narrow interests. And a lot of them revolve around kind of dating and relationships, because we are relational people.
Yes.
Date My Pet, you know, is a new one, an online dating site for pet lovers. So before you even choose whether or not you want to go on the date, you can work out whether they have you're compatible with the number of with the types of breed of animal and how many animals the other person
has. Vital.
So, you know, you wouldn't think that was particularly important, but for some people it is.
There you go.
You know, Farmers Only, network for people who are too busy to date during the harvest season. There is a website just for people who want to find a partner based on the type of moustache they have. Or there's a Star Trek dating website, you know, a new niche website just for people who want to connect with Star Trek fans.
Trekkies.
There's probably only about four people on that site, but it's there for anyone who's interested. So we've got the big networks that we've talked about, your Facebooks, Twitters, but also we can dig down a lot more, and people are finding, and this is the beauty of the internet on a more serious level, people are able to connect with people who are like them in all of our strange and crazy ways.
Steve Krieger, you do find the most amazing things. Thank you so much again for joining us on Open House.
Thanks, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.